This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'm really excited to welcome to today's show Sarah Montgomery, Louisiana's only female professional race car driver. Before we begin, Sarah, I'd like to take a moment to thank, first of all, Raider Solutions and Jason Sikora, who's taping our show today. Raider Solutions is an IT solution company, and they are located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. I'd also like to thank Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. For more information on all the happenings in Lafayette, please visit LafayetteTravel.com. So, Sarah, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you both for having me.
Oh, my goodness. I've been so excited about this. We were yakking before the show started. We actually have a connection through our faith, through Asbury. But of course, I knew about you through your race car adventures. So
social media.
And just people talking about you, the buzz. So before we get into the love of your life, your racing, I'd like for you to share your education here in Lafayette. I know you're a musician. If you can tell us about your background before we jump into the racing.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Lafayette and grew up here, lived here all my life, and still am here because there's honestly no other place that I'd rather be. You know, with traveling a lot with racing, it's really cool seeing other parts of the country, but Lafayette's such a unique place in the culture and the food. I honestly don't think I could see myself living anywhere else. But I, like I said, grew up here, went to Lafayette High, graduated from UL in 2016 with a marketing degree, was head drum major at Lafayette High in the band and played the clarinet, and was also in choir at church and was really heavily involved in music. And I think music really gave me a focus to race. As much as I love music, it totally taught me so much about myself and how to stay focused and push towards one big goal. So I have a lot to thank for my music. But
Sarah, let's get in for a moment. You didn't just play music. You played the clarinet solo at Carnegie Hall.
Yep, I did that. So with Lafayette High Band, I was the first chair clarinetist. And every 4 years, Lafayette High goes to play in Carnegie Hall in New York, which is such a cool and unique opportunity for all of the students there. And it just so happened my year that we went was my senior year, and I was first chair clarinetist. And the music that Mr. Walker picked at the time, there was a huge, like, minute and a half long clarinet solo.
Oh, wow.
So, and not only was it a solo, you know, you usually think people sit in the you know, the band and play their solo from their seat. Nope. I got up and stood right in front of Mr. Walker and played my solo for about a minute and a half. And I have never been more nervous my entire life. It was such an amazing experience. And my entire family was there. Mm-hmm. A lot of Lafayette people went to New York. And it was just so special to play an amazing solo in such a unique and famous place.
What a life memory for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I've never been more nervous. You know, racing cars, you know, is nerve-wracking, but it was on a totally different level, but it was so amazing.
Yeah. And then you stayed here for college also. You graduated from UL Lafayette,
as I understand. Yep. In 2016, I graduated in marketing and made many connections, and it helped me with racing also. Because I got a marketing degree, and when I graduated, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to do now besides try and be a professional race car driver, which doesn't pay the bills right now, but, you know.
It could, but you need a day job.
Right, exactly. So it's been great. I love it here and don't want to go anywhere else.
This is what the whole show's about, why Lafayette is such a great place to live. So thank you for getting that in.
Well, she didn't tell me to say that. Genuine.
So I know now you're employed by Fresh Air Systems Technologies, which I know you learned about through the race car driving, which we'll talk about more. But what is that? What do they offer at that company?
So in the race car, it gets to be about 150 to 200 degrees because it's a closed cockpit. Mm-hmm. There's no windows. There's no air conditioning. And it's just brutally hot. And not only that, but you're wearing 8 layers of fire-resistant clothing. and it gets sweltering in there, just like beyond belief, beyond imagine. So yeah, sweating just thinking about it. So what Fresh Air Systems Technologies does is they make t-shirts with tubes that sewn on it, and in the passenger seat there's an ice chest that has ice and water in it, and it connects to the shirt and literally just circulates ice cold water through the shirt. And then it puts the hot water from your body back in the ice chest and just constantly circulates. So it's kind of like, in a sense, a heated blanket, but obviously with water. And
so it's your first layer,
right?
With all the other
layers. Exactly. So it keeps you cool.
And you know that's not just used for race car professionals. Right. Other people use that too.
Many other people use it. It's a lot of stunt people in movies use it, which is kind of bizarre. You know, you don't see the behind the scenes of people making movies. But doctors use it, and you know, firefighters, surgeons. Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty much in a lot of places you go, but you just never see it.
Right.
So
I didn't know anything about that when I was researching for the interview. I learned quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a totally different world, racing. They have a whole bunch of different things that people don't even know exist. So.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So you're active here, you're busy working. I'd like to go back to your early days, and I've seen different reports, but the story that stuck with me was when you were 10 years old.
Yep.
And you saw one of your, what became an idol. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah, so even before that, Santa brought me a Barbie Jeep. And I literally drove the heck out of that thing, you know, and, you know, being like 4 or 5 years old, I had my dad soup up the battery. So it was just like, what, another mile an hour or two faster? Yeah.
Was it pink?
It was pink.
Yeah.
It was literally a Barbie Jeep, you know?
Of course it was.
Yeah. So, and the best part of that story that my dad really likes telling is, you know, the plastic wheels, you know, last forever on the Barbie Jeep, but I went through three sets of those plastic tires. So he's like on the internet trying to find, you know, replacement tires for a Barbie Jeep, because I would literally eat through them. That's how much I drove. And then had really no interest in driving back then, which is kind of funny. Until I was 10, when my parents got free tickets to an IndyCar race. I think my dad sold, you know, had the most sales that month, so they gave him free tickets. And we all went as a family and had suite tickets, you know, where it's free food, like behind the glass window. And I was one of many, many kids that were in there, and I was the only one against the glass watching the entire race the whole time. And my dad was like, this isn't good. And so more than anything, I wanted to go down in the stands to just feel and hear and get all the senses. And so we snuck down there, and honestly, that's totally what pulled me in. The smell of the fuel, the smell and the burning of the tires, and just the way the cars passing by made your body feel. It's like no other, you can't explain it or describe it. You know, you just have to feel it. It's just your whole body shaking and just like this deep growl in your stomach when, you know, 48 cars pass by you at 200 miles an hour. It's absolutely insane.
And you were 10 years old.
And I was 10 years old. And Danica Patrick, which, you know, many people have at least heard of her, was just getting her start in IndyCar at the time. And she was this short, only woman, and who was really sassy, you know, super not like many of the other guys, but wanted to prove her point and show her way. Which for a 10-year-old, you know, I just idolized that and was like, I want to be just like her one day. So after the race, we went home, and I told my parents, I'm like, I want to be a race car driver. And my mom and dad kind of laughed it off because, you know, at 10 years old, everyone wants to be, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then next week, it's something totally different. But exactly. So I didn't change my mind at all. For the next year, I watched racing every weekend. I learned more about the sport, the drivers, things like that. And then that next year, we got the same tickets to that next race. It just literally sealed the deal for me. When we came back, I brought my parents my 11-year-old life savings in a piggy bank, and said, please get me involved. I'm desperate. I want to be a race car driver. And my mom was like, absolutely not. You know, you can be a ballerina or something that's way safer.
Right.
And my dad looked at her and was like, I'm not telling her no. So they caved and bought me a dirt oval go-kart. So I got started racing when I was around 11 years old.
In a go-kart.
In a go-kart, yeah.
Well, let's hold that thought while we take a moment to thank Raider Solutions. Raider Solutions, a technology company which creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses, functioning as their complete IT department from networks, phones, hosting of servers, and a service-oriented help desk. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. So Sarah, you got a go-kart, I'm assuming, when your father supported you, and yep. I'm sure your mother went along.
Yes, she did.
I can't imagine how concerned I would be for your safety.
Exactly.
But what was it like then? Do you remember, was that a charge like the Barbie Jeep had been, or was it a whole different level?
It was a totally different level. I didn't know it was happening. I did not know it was happening. And my dad and mom walked in with this old, old motorcycle helmet that they used to have that would just sit in the garage. You know, you pass by it, see it, and know it's there. And they handed it to me. And I'm like, what is this for? Like, why do I want this? You know, I'm 11 years old. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with this? And
protect brain cells.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, that's when they told me, we bought you a go-kart.
Oh, gosh.
And I started bawling at that point. And my dad was like, I have no idea what is going on. I don't even know how to deal with a go-kart, but we're going to figure it out.
Oh, my gosh.
So the guy we bought the go-kart from spent a lot of time with us. And, you know, because there's more work going into it than you would think. You know, I had to sit on scales in the go-kart and, you know, weigh it to have a certain cross weight and make sure that it handled correctly in the corners. Mm-hmm. A lot more work than you would think. So it was just an amazing way to get started in racing. A really unique way, I guess you can say.
How fast do go-karts go?
Those were really insane go-karts. So purely methanol-driven go-karts. So the you couldn't see the gas catch on fire if it were to. I mean, they were super fast. They're not like kart ranch go-karts. They're 50 to 100 mile an hour go-karts. And when you hit a wall, you literally have whiplash. I got whiplash so many times. I can't turn my neck all the way to the right. Yeah, it was
Sarah,
insane.
Your dad really was supportive of the game.
Yeah, and my mom had to keep her head turned quite often.
I was thinking maybe we're 35 miles an hour, which is still fast.
No, you know? they were
because you're
mega
low to
quick.
The ground. You're really unprotected. I know you've got the helmet.
We had a helmet on and a neck brace, and I also wore a chest protector because if you were to hit, you want to fly out of the go kart. You don't want to be stuck in it because if it starts rolling, then you're just carrying, you know, a couple hundred pounds on top of you and weighs more than you. So with the chest protector, if I were to fly out, it would protect my ribs from breaking, you know, on the steering wheel or whatever. But after every race weekend, I always had bruises everywhere. And the funny thing is I had to go to the walk-in clinic one time after a race, and they called Child Protective Services on my mom because of the amount of bruises I had from the seat, because it's so it's such a brutal sport, you know, more than
And you're so bumping.
And it's so bumpy,
the
and it's just, you're beating on other people the whole time. And I'm like laughing, and my mom's like hysterical. And I'm like, I swear, I race go-karts, and all the bruises are from that. And sure enough, obviously, they let it go, but it was. I find it funny. But
yeah. Wait, one day you'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
So where did you go race? How did you start out?
So here locally, there is a track called Acadiana Speedway. Right in Bro Bridge. So that's where I started. And then after a couple years of getting the hang of it and finally competing, you know, not being lapped every race that when I first started, I started going to Mississippi, Texas, and other parts of Louisiana where they had other tracks here. So all over the place, Southern, when I was racing go-karts.
Were you one of the youngest, or is that a typical age, 11, 12?
No, it's typical. They actually had a class that started five-year-olds racing, but obviously they were much slower.
Right.
but yeah, it was a normal age, you know, nothing out of the ordinary.
Right, so. And you did well at that once you got the hang of it.
Yeah, once we got the hang of it, this one engine we got our hands on was just a monster, and it just... killed everyone, which I'm obviously grateful for because it helped me win many races and things like that. But yeah, it's once I started getting the hang of it and my dad started understanding more of setup on the car, we started winning many races and I won a couple championships. And at our local track, I was the only female, the first female at least, to win a championship. So
gosh,
it was really cool.
So where did you go to middle school?
I went to Alamo.
So you were school during the day and then weekend road warrior, huh?
Yep, go-kart. Exactly. Gosh. Exactly.
Did you play the instrument? I'm just trying to think how you had time for all this.
Yeah, I did. I was in the Alamo band.
Oh, gosh,
and then,
what a busy time.
Yeah, I don't know how I would live my life if I wasn't doing something all the time. So I think band taught me that.
Yeah.
You had to multitask well.
Yeah, so. And focus, as we'll talk about.
Exactly.
So then how long did you ride go-karts or race go-karts and then transition into the... cars?
I mean, so I raced go-karts for about 4 to 5 years, and then half a year after that was go-karts, and then the other transitioned into car racing
once you got your license.
Yeah, well, no, actually before. I started car racing when I was about 14 to 15 years old. So I learned how to drive a stick at 14 and started car racing before I even had a driver's license. So a funny story to that is in Cajun Field parking lot, I had a go-kart that I was practicing in because it was a unique asphalt go-kart. So it had shifting gears and stuff on it as opposed to my dirt go-kart, which didn't have any of that. And we had cones set up and my dad was out there. And this guy pulls up and, you know, starts talking to my dad and was like, my God, your son is just flying out there, you know? And he's like, God, that is so cool. I'm glad to see someone in Lafayette really, you know, catching on to a sport that I love so dearly. Mm-hmm. And I pull back up and take my helmet off and his eyes, he like had bug eyes or like, you know, deer in the headlights. Like, oh my God, it's a young girl. And so ever since then, he's been like a guardian angel to me. And he is the one who got me started in car racing.
Who is that?
Brent Mosing.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's the cause of all my car racing career.
It's his fault.
Yeah. So I call him my second father because he's just been such a joy. And very helpful for racing and got me started in cars, let me use one of his race cars to start racing in a car race, which was crazy.
Oh, I bet.
But yeah, it's kind of funny how the world works, you know, perfect timing on things.
So if I'm putting all this together, from reading your, you know, some interviews you've done, you had a car named Captain Nemo. Was that your first car?
Yep, that's the car that Mr. Brent let me use.
It was underwater.
Underwater in Katrina for 2 weeks. And right afterwards, it was given to me to race, but obviously it was safe. But anytime we, you know, put a hammer to the floor to, you know, mash it even again from, you know, running over God knows what in a race, but, you know, the hammer would always go through the floor because it was just a really rusty car. So, but it was my learning car. It was the most perfect learning car because it wasn't this brand new hand built race car that, you know, is super easy to drive. It was a really difficult race car to learn in. But it's only made me a better driver.
So I'm just trying to picture you at the wheel. You're 14-ish, and you're in your first race or even your first drive.
Yeah.
Explain that, if you can talk about your feelings.
Yeah, you
know,
so
graduating to that.
It was incredible. It was like a dream come true, you know, and I had such big dreams back then, and obviously I still do,
you're so
but
young.
To move from cart racing to car racing was something I never even really saw coming just because it's so expensive. And it just, you know, kind of all came together at the perfect time. And I was just absolutely thrilled that they let me race at 14 years old because they're super hesitant for letting someone without a driver's license race in a car race, you know, with other older guys. I was the only woman in the race when I first started in car racing, and it was against, you know, guys 30 plus, you know, so I was the only young one out there and a female, so I had a lot of hard times
heckling,
you know, with
huh?
that. Yeah. And you know, you shouldn't be out here. There was one guy who tried to, you know, crash me in the wall one time on my first race, actually. It was just really frightening to me. But if I didn't have those support groups and the few guys that really did believe in me, I don't know where I'd be today, but you know, it was special to find out who my true friends were, if that makes sense.
It does. Where was that first race?
It was south of Baton Rouge in a little town called White Castle.
I have been there. I was going to ask you. We have friends that we've met there.
Yeah.
And those things where you can just drive in, like it's there. Maybe yours was different, but they have different types of races.
And, yeah.
That probably must be a popular spot for that.
It's kind of, you know, declined over the past few years here recently, but it was pretty big when I first started there.
Yeah. I remember we didn't have phone service at the time. Like,
oh, yeah,
it was
no,
so far
there's
out.
Still no phone service. It's literally in a cornfield in the middle of nowhere.
So you started out there. It is in the middle of a cornfield.
Yep.
Gosh, so you think if you hadn't met Mr. Mosing, this might not have happened, at least at that point.
Not at all, no. Yeah. Brent's been such a great mentor for me because he had been car racing for so long, and something my dad couldn't help me with was, you know, the technique, the correct technique of driving. Right. You know, my dad helped me with just about everything else, but Brent taught me that and literally brought me along under his wing, and has just been, without him, I would not be where I am today. So
well,
I'm very grateful.
I'm glad
for
you
him.
Gave him a shout out.
Yeah.
Let me ask you,
he's
going
to be mad I did.
Well, probably so. And we need to get your parents' names in too. I don't know your mother. Robert is your dad.
Robert's my dad, and Laura's my mom.
Robert and Laura Montgomery. Yeah. I know you owe them so much.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that somebody tried to ram you into the wall. Is that. Is that legal? Like, can people, are there rules? I don't know much about racing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely against the rules.
I mean, that's suicidal.
And he got scrutinized really intensely after that, to the point where it scared him off and I never saw him again.
So he bumped, like, the side of your car?
He was, so I was in front of him, and he would pull all the way up to the right side of my car, slam on his brakes, and stay right behind me and, like, rub me against the back of my car and then move up to the left side and, like, just really be super intimidating. And my first time in a car race is so intimidating, more than you know, because you're going 120 miles an hour with, you know, 10 other cars that are all beating and banging in front of you, and you're like, I just want to make it through the race here. And this guy, I pointed him by, I slowed down to let him go, because my first race, I just wanted to make it through to kind of understand everything. Now it's a little different, but yeah, that was just really wrong of what he did, and he got in big trouble for it.
Good.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's dangerous enough. It just, sometimes I'm just amazed when you hear stories, you know.
Yeah, they're different.
Yeah, so you survived your first race.
I did.
And then what unfolded from there? I guess it really got you at that point. You knew.
Yeah. So it's probably a bad comparison, but racing is really like a drug. And once it's in your system, it's stuck. And you'll find anything you do to get your racing fix, because I'm at a racetrack every weekend almost. In fact, I'm going to a racetrack tomorrow and going to a racetrack this weekend. Totally different events. I was at a racetrack last weekend.
Yeah.
I'm always at a track because it's one big family. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, don't live in the same place. You know, I have friends in Florida. I have friends in California. New York, Texas, and when we all go to the track, we all come together and are like a big happy family.
Yeah.
So not only is racing fun, but it's also the people and the environment. It's a really unique thing, unlike any other, honestly.
Right. So you were in high school, I guess, or starting high school, and you raced all through high school. I mean, this was your passion, as you said.
Yeah, so Dr. Leonard, who was the principal at Lafayette High, was all for my racing. And there were a lot of events that, you know, races go from Wednesday through Sunday usually, because you have practice one day, then qualifying another, and then two races, usually the Saturday and Sunday, but you have to be there that Wednesday. And in high school, you know, racing is a sport, and it's not considered a high school athletic sport because it's not the Lafayette High, you know, race team. So it was hard for me because it wasn't a school sanctioned event. But Dr. Leonard went out of his way to make it possible for me, you know, gave me days that would be me touring college days as a racing excuse, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be missing class, and my teachers would let me take those tests. So it was, and honestly, from then on, I've had the greatest luck with teachers and people wanting me to succeed and letting me go and do the racing thing. Right. So without them, it would have been impossible. But yeah, all through high school, I was racing. All through college, mm-hmm. I was racing, and part of middle school. So.
And you kept your grades up. So
yep,
it didn't
kept my grades up. Without my grades being up, I wouldn't have been able to race. Right. It was a strict rule.
Right. So tell us, you graduated from Captain Nemo. You've had other vehicles. Were Mazdas next on the
So chain? Captain Nemo was a Mazda.
Okay.
It was a 1990 Mazda Miata. Little five speed.
I had one of those.
Standard transmission car. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't race it, but
yeah, it's fine. That's a perfect race car. Mm-hmm. You could sell that for a lot of money right now. But so I moved up to a it's like a 2006 Mazda MX-5, so same car, mm-hmm. but just a newer model, and raced that for about 3 years, and then moved to and graduated-ish to the 2017 Mazda MX-5 race car, which was so incredible. Mazda was just so, it was just so much fun to drive. And then last year, I raced a Honda Civic. And then this year I'm looking at racing that Audi that we were talking about earlier. Yeah. So the higher you go, the more you go up, the more horsepower and more cooler the cars are technically. Mm-hmm. So slowly making my way up to get into one day, hopefully the Ferraris, the Lamborghinis, Porsche, things like that. So.
Yeah. So I don't want to bring up too much negative here, but I know you've done well. You've done very well winning races.
Yep.
It isn't a totally safe sport, and you've had
not a couple of fumbles,
but I mean, you've had a couple of things happen where you came out of it okay.
Yeah.
But can you talk about that? What?
Yeah.
That was
so
like?
Racing obviously is a dangerous sport. You know, it's hard to even explain, but this past year in 2017, I had the worst wreck of my racing career and that many people have ever seen in their life. I was going through the most dangerous corner in North America at about 130 miles an hour. And I don't remember any of it, but my dad swears something broke on the rear of the car, and my car slammed into a cement wall, and there was no barriers or no padding. So imagine a hit to a wall at 130 miles an hour. And there was so much momentum, the car had nowhere to go but except rolling. And so I did many, like 8 to 10 barrel rolls in the air, and every time the car slammed on the ground, it always landed on the driver's side. And every time it landed on the driver's side, it only made the seat shove out the window more. So it was just literally my head and my seat hitting the ground every time the car was rolling, if that makes sense. But I was knocked out for most of it. I don't remember any of it. But the safety crew was there really quickly, got me out of the car and sent me to the hospital. I came back, results were fine. I broke a couple of ribs.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, if one safety thing hadn't been put on correctly, or if I didn't have my helmet strapped on correctly, I wouldn't be here today. Right. But it's amazing how safe the sport is now. Cause I feel safer in my race car than I do driving on Johnson Street.
Yeah,
seriously. I do. But yeah, last year was rough.
You lost your car, obviously.
I lost my car. Yeah, my helmet completely spider cracked and shattered. And
but not
helmets
your head.
Now,
I mean,
but not
that's
my head.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I'm here.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah. It was a really rough, and still is a rough year, because we call it the wreck that keeps on giving, because it's been such a burden. But I'm ready to move forward and just look past and keep going, because there's nothing more that I want to do than be a pro race car driver, and I'm ready for it.
Yeah, I know you're ready.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what it's like to support your passion, because I know this is an expensive endeavor.
Yeah.
And I know you want to mention some support you've gotten from some of your partners.
Yeah.
And if you can just talk what it's like to be in a race and having to change out the tires and travel expenses. What is it like?
Yeah, so I've been so grateful to work with Lafayette Travel the past 4 to 5 years now. They've been such a special partner of mine, you know, because I travel all around the country with a king cake most of the time.
You do?
To bring the Cajun culture with me to the to my racing friends and convince them to come to Lafayette,
yeah,
which has helped. You know,
yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I had friends driving through in their race trailers, and they all stopped in Doosan, stayed the night in Lafayette. So it's really special to be sponsored by the city.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Ben
so Berthelot cool.
Ben Berthelot is just so supportive.
Exactly. And they have been. And, you know, after my accident, they called my dad and wanted to make sure I was okay. And it's a family thing. It's really a really cool partnership. Mm-hmm. And then I also work closely with a charity called Lemons of Love. Mm-hmm. They are out of Chicago, but they donate chemo care packages to those going through chemo. And we might be starting one down here in Lafayette. So,
yeah.
But that's in the works. So, but yeah, really unique partnership. I have a guy who, you know, gives money to Lemons and they give it to me. So we all benefit. But it's really unique and it's really fun.
Yeah.
You know, I love having partners, but to get into the racing series I'm looking at now, I need a lot more help and a lot more partnerships. And, that's kind of what my hunt is right now, is just finding the perfect company that, you know, wants me as a spokesperson and that would just be really fun to help out and, you know, go along this ride with me.
Right. Because we were talking before about even just the insurance. I mean, you've got to insure your car.
Yeah.
For each event, I'm assuming that's how it works.
Yeah. So I've actually never used the insurance because it's so expensive.
Is it like per race? Is that how they charge?
Per race. But it's almost not worth it if your car's not that expensive. And, you know, the series I'm looking at doing next year and this year even is a really expensive car. So this year I'll definitely be getting that insurance. But I've never used it. But I know a lot of people that have. And obviously it works.
And I think I read you said that you have to change out the tires after every three or four races. You have to.
It's actually more than that. So every weekend we have, you know, qualifying, practice, and two races. And we probably go through four sets of tires every weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's expensive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they regular tires or are they high-end?
So
what type of tires
do you need? It's a slick tire. So, you know, the tire you have on your car, they completely shave off all those grooves until there's that thin, flat surface.
It makes you go faster.
And that's what we ride on. Yeah, exactly. So there's the most possible grip on the tire with it being completely flat. It's what we call our slick tires. Mm-hmm. So
they do wear out fast because you've gotten rid of all the
They do wear out very quickly.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So you've got people that, do you pay people to help you? Or
So we have teams. Uh-huh. And similar to NASCAR, we have our team that transports our car to every event. And so, and they take care of it. So we technically just fly in and get in the car and drive. And, you know, come in for a pit stop. They refuel. You stay in the car and they change all your tires and then you go back out, sort of thing. So without teams it would just be impossible. So so we do hire a team to take care of our car, you know, change the oils, make sure everything's running right. And then when we get to the track, they also do track side support technically, where they take care of everything. You know, if you're complaining about the car not handling well, they'll fix that for you too. And they're your pit crew also.
How many women are there out there that are professional drivers? Is it a handful or is this becoming a growing sport for women?
It's still a handful, but it's growing, I would say. For every 100 men drivers out there, I'd say there's about 2 to 3 women, which is a lot more than it used to be. There used to be none, and then, you know, it was one and then trickled to two, and now it's about 3-ish. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's still small, but it's growing, which is really cool.
Yeah. Is your idol Danica Patrick, is she still racing? I don't know.
So she just retired this year.
Okay.
Her last race ever will be the Indy 500 in May, which is really cool. She's had such a great career. I know NASCAR really frustrated her because she didn't do so well on that because it's so competitive, which I totally understand. But it's really cool to see she's made such a footprint for women in motorsports.
And you've met her?
I've never met her.
You have never met
her? Never met her.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that works out for you.
I know. One day.
She'll want to meet you. I have no
doubt.
So what's coming up in 2018? What's on the horizon
so
for you?
So I'm trying to get into what's called the Continental Tire Sports Car Series. So I race on road course tracks. So NASCAR usually does oval where it's just left-hand turns. What I do is left and right-hand turns with hills and like big drops and like, you know, crazy, really fun, no corners ever the same, and sports cars. So every car you see on the track is going to be different than the next. So like NASCAR, they're all the exact same cars, you know, just with different stickers on them. But in this kind of racing I do, it's sports cars. So you'll see a Mazda, then a Honda, then an Alfa Romeo, then a Volkswagen, and you know, the list goes on. So it's completely unique and really all about the driver performing their best to win the race. So what I'm trying to do this year is get into the Continental Tire Sports Car Series in an Audi TCR car, which is about 400 horsepower. It's a front wheel drive car and it's absolutely amazing. It is such an incredible race. It's nationally televised, which is new for me too, which is really cool if I can make that happen, because it only help out my partners. And you also have a co-driver. So I'm looking at partnering with a female, another female, which will only bring us that much more attention. Right. And she's fast too. So we could really dominate and be that unique woman team that, you know, wins races, and it would just be so much fun.
Is she young like you?
We're the same age, and she's super outgoing also, and we're like sisters, talk every day. So she's cool. But the cool thing about this series, which makes it different from like NASCAR, it's 2.5 hour races, and one single person would struggle to do 2.5 hour long races because it's so hot in the car and the G forces, which, you know, when you're riding a roller coaster and you can't pick your head up, that's G forces. So imagine that times like two in a race car. So you're going through a corner having to, you know, force your body to stay in that position to make it through. It's really tiring on a person. So 2.5 hours is pretty long. So about halfway through the race, you come in for a pit stop, so your driver, so your team can change your tires and add fuel, and all at the same time, I'm getting out while putting my co-driver in the car to finish the race.
Right.
So it's a really unique way to do racing, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you have quite a bit to look forward to this year, then.
Yeah. Exactly. If I can make it work, I'm struggling on funding now, but working on it.
Well, so. I'm going to be saying prayers for you, and
Thank you.
I hope this podcast helps you get the message out.
Yeah.
I do want to say, before we close our interview, I know that prayer is important to you.
Yep.
And can we talk about that? Because when I've read your story, Sarah, out of all your accomplishments, which are they're tremendous, what I really liked the best was when you encourage other people to know that if they put their mind to something and don't let others' opinions sway them.
Right.
I mean, that's your faith that is grounding you.
Yep. It's, I mean, honestly, it's what got me here, you know? So I feel the want to give that, you know, motivation to others, because like I was saying earlier, in my first car race, when someone was trying to take me out, I was ready to quit, but I had those few people who were like, that guy's just not the normal, you know, he's, you know, kind of a jerk and that's not normal. So you should keep doing what you want to do. And from then on, I've had those people just in different forms, you know, random fans have come up to me and just don't quit, you know, just that's you're great. Doing this. And my daughter looks up to you and it's amazing. And to see the young girls at the racetrack wanting your autograph and your picture is just so indescribable. It's really cool. And everywhere in my room and pretty much everywhere on my pages, you can see the word believe. And that's what I've stuck with my entire racing career, is that one word. Because just believing in yourself, believing in your team, your family, the funding coming through, and of course, the one above is just the way that everything comes together, as it already has so far. So before every race, I have my helmet on and I'm trying to get, as we call, in the zone, and which is the maximum focus. And before we go out on track, I always say a prayer, and I'm still here. So obviously something's working. But yeah, it's really cool to try and pass on that message to others, because that's the only way I've made it here. So, you know, it can only be helping.
And I think, I can't tell your story better than you just did. And at some times we might have a bravery deficit. I think young women, you know, it's easy to get discouraged and think, I can't do it, I'm not good enough, or, you know, maybe I should just try something else. And to have someone like you stand up, smile, and tell them you can do what you put your mind to.
Yep, exactly.
I know we can't do everything we'd like to do, but we can do almost everything we put our mind to.
Exactly.
And you're beautiful. Spokesperson for that. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it was kind of hard because when I was young and like trying to do go-karting and, you know, had all those bruises and it just looked bad, you know, because a woman isn't supposed to be covered in bruises. And I had teachers, I had counselors telling me you should not be doing that. And it really made me mad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is not cool. I'm going to prove them wrong. You know, one of my best friend's mom was even like, women are not even supposed to be in this sport. But she, you know, was proud of me when I won, but she just kept drilling that into my head. And I'm like, nope, I'm not listening to you. Yeah. I don't think that's right. So I'm going to do what I feel like doing. And if, you know, someone, you know, I'm just going to make it happen. Yeah. So,
well, I'm glad you have.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess the term Godspeed. Godspeed to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And God be with you as you speed down the raceway. So
perfect.
Sarah, this has been a pleasure. And I think we have some questions from Jason Sikora.
I almost always have some
follow-ups. Always good.
Well, first I wanted to say, if you're not into racing or you've never been to a race, do yourself a favor and go and get as close down there as possible.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's no, you can't really describe the feeling of all of those cars going by.
You can't.
It's so thrilling though.
Yeah, it's so thrilling. And you don't realize how fast 200 mile an hour is until you're against the fence.
Yeah, and they're whizzing by. Yeah. And yeah, it's the I don't know, it's like the force of those vehicles just pushes on you.
And the noise, it's so loud. And oh God, it's just amazing.
It really is.
Now I have to go.
Yeah.
To ride with you somewhere.
Exactly.
Do you still play clarinet?
I haven't in a while. I played all the way through college. And then racing's really just taken over my life, which is what I exactly wanted to happen. But I started picking up piano. So every once in a while I play that. So I still am involved in music, not necessarily clarinet, but I do play music, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What else in racing that you found fascinating that most people don't know about? Or is there anything else?
Yes. So the people who actually work hard to be there is really fascinating to me because, you know, you go through the paddock, which is where all the cars are parked, and, you know, there's 100 cars out there on any given weekend. And just looking at how many people have worked really hard for sponsorships, and it's not their own checkbook or their parents' checkbook, you know, writing the check for them to be there. It's really cool to me to see those people succeeding, the ones who've really worked hard for what they wanted and haven't just been given everything to them. It makes me a little sour, but it only makes me work harder because I want that. And I want to be looked at by other people as, oh my God, she's really worked hard to get to where she is.
Exactly.
They earn that much more respect from people like me. And I would like that. And it's really a really fascinating thing because a lot of people don't see that. They just see cars on the track and, you know, think money comes out from nowhere. But it's really hard to have the full funding. And when you do, no telling where it comes from. So it's really a unique thing.
Interesting. And finally, any advice for kids that want to get into racing or parents who have kids that want to get into racing?
Yeah. So obviously the best way to start would be in go-karting. That's where many of the great racers got started. You know, Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt Jr., all of that. They all started in dirt and kart racing is actually asphalt that they started in. But that would be my go-to. Hey, get your kid a go-kart and go start racing.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you still have your go-kart, your original?
I have one of them. Uh-huh. Not my original. I wound up with 3 or 4 at one time, so we had to sell them off. But I do have one, and I have a couple of the motors still. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah, your pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Sarah Montgomery, Louisiana's only female professional race car driver, Lafayette native, who's proud to be from here. Thank
proud
you for all you do.
Here. Never leaving.
Good. Thank you for all you do to promote our wonderful state and our wonderful region. We really appreciate you. And I'd like to thank Jason Sikora and Raider Solutions for making this show possible, and also Lafayette Travel, Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. For more information, you can go to lafayettetravel.com. To listen to this podcast and all of our podcasts, please visit discoverlafayette.net. You can listen online, or you can subscribe through either your Apple device or an Android device right there on the website. And if you do subscribe, we ask that you please rate and review. It helps me to keep this show going. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.